This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Where is Heather? An unwitting sex affair with a married man, unbeknownst to her. Now, the restaurant hostess's phone has been turned off. Last active, 3 a.m. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
Heather Elvis is a young, hardworking 20-year-old girl from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. She has moved out of her parents' home and into her own apartment with her best friend and roommate, Brianna. The two girls work as waitresses at a local restaurant. And while there, Heather meets Sydney Moore, an older welder by trade. And the two soon grow feelings for each other, kickstarting a troubled affair.
Troubled is certainly one way of putting it. Tonight, where is Heather? Why is her phone cut off and then last active at 3 a.m. in the morning? Listen.
Now, her purse and her cell phone are missing along with her. Everything else looks to be where it's supposed to be.
On December 19th, a green Dodge Intrepid is found parked the wrong way at the Peachtree Landing boat launch in Socastie. The vehicle is locked, and running the license plate of the car, the registration comes back to Terry Elvis, Heather's father. Police contact Elvis, and he comes to the boat landing with spare keys to unlock the car. The car is 8 miles from Heather Elvis's apartment, and once her father unlocks the car, police find Heather's keys, phone, and purse all missing. Calls to her phone go unanswered. Heather is not at her apartment and doesn't show up at her job.
In that sound from our friends at HLN, you hear Heather's dad, Terry Elvis, stating that her purse, her cell phone, missing with her. Everything else appears to be in order. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we're learning tonight. First, I want to go out to some very, very special guests. This is Heather's mother and sister, Debbie and Morgan Elvis. Thank you for being with us. Straight out to Debbie Elvis. This is Heather's mom. I cannot imagine what you're going through. You put all your time, your energy, your love, your money, 200% blood, sweat, and tears, you pour it into your children, and then to have your beautiful daughter just disappear like that, never a hint of trouble ever from Heather Elvis. She wasn't some juvenile delinquent that made all Fs and would stand out on the corner smoking and vaping. That wasn't Heather. Not at all. Beautiful, bright, hardworking, industrious. When did you learn that she was seemingly missing with her cell phone and purse gone? When did you learn that?
We didn't really learn she was missing until we found out about her car. An officer stopped by the house and said that there was a car parked at Peachtree Boat Landing that was ours. And I realized it was Heather's car he was talking about, and my husband rode with him down to the landing to see why it was left there. We thought maybe she was on a boat with somebody, but the fact that she wouldn't answer her phone, which never happens, she always has her phone on and handy, she always answered. That was a worrisome issue, but it took us calling everybody to realize there was something very wrong. But her not answering her phone was a big clue that something was very wrong.
We are showing you shots not only of Heather, but of her green Dodge Intrepid found parked, abandoned, interesting, perpendicular to the parking spaces at Peachtree Landing Boat Launch. Completely unlike her. Look at the way she kept her vehicle in perfect, pristine condition. You know, car nuts. My daughter is the same way, Mrs. Elvis. Her car is spotless. Unlike everybody else in our family, she won't let the dog get in it. She won't let the cat get in it. She won't let me in it with my hot tea. No way. And I find it very curious, very curious. Let me go out to Nancy Livesay, Horry County prosecutor, intimately familiar with the investigation in this case. Nancy, I know that may not mean a lot to other people, but to me, that's very, very probative. And it reminds me of a case you and I are familiar with, of Tara Grinstead, a gorgeous young teacher, high school teacher. She was a beauty queen that goes missing suddenly out of South Georgia. And the search went on and on and on. And when I met with her mother, we walked through her home. And Nancy, her home was in perfect condition, like it had just been professionally cleaned. And right. I found out she was a neatnik, like Heather and her car, right? And yes. I noticed that the lamp was askew in her bedroom. Like the shade was messed up. And I thought right. she would not have walked out with that because it's even bothering me. Then I looked at her car, Nancy. The car, which she kept like Heather did, perfectly pristine, was covered in mud on the outside and the front seat. She was a petite young lady. The seat was reared all the way back for a really tall person to drive. And I knew right then that Tara Grinstead was long gone. Now, would it mean anything to a jury? I don't know, but it meant something to me. So if Heather was a neatnik about her car, why would she leave it parked perpendicular to the other spots and abandoned? She would never do that.
No, absolutely. And I think, too, what speaks to me and spoke to the police department was, I think this meant that clearly someone picked her up that she was comfortable with. This was not a struggle. This was not a stranger abduction, but this was a situation where she got out of the car and she knew the individual that she was going to meet. She had her phone, her purse.
Interesting, Nancy Livesay. If she had not known the individual, how would you expect the scene to look differently? Because, you know, now I'm thinking back to a morning anchor, Jody Huzentruit, who didn't show up for her show first thing in the morning. Her car was sitting out in the parking lot, much like Heather's, except a shoe, one of her high heel shoe and some hairspray was lying in the parking lot near her car.
That's
which
right.
to me indicated that fell out of her pocketbook and she lost her shoe in a struggle. But you're saying just the way that this is amazing, Nancy Livesay. Hey, you know, Jimmy Richardson, you got a keeper right there. I hope you know that. What would you have expected at the scene if there had been a struggle?
Something similar to what you just discussed, a missing shoe, something falling out of her pocketbook, maybe even the phone. Maybe the person got the phone from her and she lost control of the phone. But clearly the fact that the doors were locked, the windows were up, she had her phone, she had her keys, she had her pocketbook. There was no sign of a struggle at all.
Interesting.
And Nancy,
jump in.
There was a trailer park right beside Peachtree Landing, and the police combed that trailer park for anyone that would have heard a sign of a struggle, gunshot, argument, anything like that. And it was within 50 yards of where Heather's car was parked in the middle of the night with very little sound. Nobody heard anything. So it had to be a very quiet abduction.
Man, I am looking at shots of Heather right now. Morgan Elvis is Heather's sister, extremely close. I guess the closest person in the world to me, other than my twins and my husband, would be my sister that I grew up with. Morgan, when did you learn that Heather was missing? I'm going to get to the affair, her unwitting affair with a married man. What is it with married men? Oh, anyway, I want to talk to you, Morgan, about when you learned Heather had seemingly just disappeared into thin air.
I was at a basketball game, and I just had this, I know that sounds weird, an inkling that something was wrong. I felt kind of off. And so I was sat at this basketball game, just kind of reeling, and I turned around, and at the top of the bleachers, my mother was looking back at me, and she had a face I'd never seen her wear before. And I knew immediately something was terribly, terribly wrong. So she came down, she had tears in her eyes, and she said, "We have to go, we have to leave now." And I didn't really know what was going on at that point, but I knew, you know, this is something very dramatic. This is something life-altering. We got in the car, and it was silent on the way home. And when I got there, it felt like everything happened so quickly and in slow motion at the same time. I learned through hearing the conversations and kind of watching what was going on. My dad was in a panic and a frenzy on the phone, calling everyone he knew. My mom was trying to tell me what was going on, but wasn't really making any sense. It was a whirlwind. And honestly, I've blocked out a lot of the details of that night. I remember more how I felt and less about the actual words that were said.
I want to go to Dr. Chloe Carmichael with us, renowned psychologist, author of Nervous Energy, How Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. Dr. Chloe, did you hear what she was saying? She remembers the moment, and I'm projecting again, when I learned something had happened to my fiance. I didn't know at the moment he had been murdered. I remember exactly where I was, what happened, the exact words that were said. But then, time before that, months. Time after that, months and months, bordering on years, are a blur. What is that phenomena that the sister, Morgan, it has lost chunks of memory around that? She can remember feelings, but not exactly what happened.
Sure, Nancy, we call that a flashbulb memory, where you have that moment in time and you remember it very, very clearly. And oftentimes it is normal to not really remember everything else so well after that point, because all of a sudden, that's a moment where your mind was given something really big and difficult to process. And so after that point, things can get a little bit blurry, as well as the time before, because the flashbulb moment is such a disorientating moment.
You know, I'm looking at shots of Heather right now, and I believe that this is the outfit she was wearing where she worked, the Tilted Kilt, a restaurant. And joining me, Peter Sestair, former lieutenant at Horry County PD, who worked on Heather's disappearance. Peter, it's great to have you along with Nancy and Jimmy. Thank you, guys. Peter, I want to focus on what jumped out at you at the scene where her Intrepid was found, but also, and first, look at the outfit that she wore. It's not exactly a Hooters outfit, but it's a revealing outfit. And that's what all the waitresses wore at the Tilted Kilt. And that would make me concerned as an investigator on the case, but makes me concerned right now, that that really opens up your pool of suspect. Every weirdo that came into the Tilted Kilt and would stare or ogle the waitresses suddenly becomes a suspect. Let's see that outfit that she had to wear at Tilted Kilt. Yeah, that. Go ahead, Peter.
Outfits like that are common in restaurants like Hooters and Tilted Kilt. They're revealing, yet not, you know, too revealing. And it's to draw attention, you know, with the customers. Obviously, Hooters and Tilted Kilt, you know, target male customers, you know, and entice them with how, you know, pretty the girls look. So, yeah, that's a problem.
Guys, you're looking at shots of Heather Elvis. Where is Heather? All we know right now is her car is found parked perpendicular to all the other spots, and she's gone with her cell phone and her pocketbook. But she's not answering the cell phone. This is just a 19-year-old girl who has been lured into a sex affair with a much older and secretly married man with three children. Wow, what could go wrong? The search is on for Heather. Listen.
Horry County Police begin a missing person investigation. The area around where her car is found at the boat landing is searched by investigators, and the riverbed is searched by a team of rescue divers from Coastal Carolina University. Searching physically around the area of the car is fruitless, but using digital information from her cell phone number, investigators begin to build a timeline. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina is known as a vacation destination for spring breakers and families alike, but it's also a wonderful area to raise a family. Heather Elvis is the oldest of Terry and Debbie Elvis's children, and at 20 years old, she's moved out of the family home and is living in an apartment with her best friend and roommate, Bree Worrellman. Worrellman and Elvis work together at the Tilted Kilt restaurant.
You know, at a lot of colleges and universities, they only have room for people to live in the dorms, say, the first year or the first 2 years, and then the students are expected to go to off-campus housing. At 19 years old, Heather had just moved in with her best friend, her roommate, Brianna. And then here comes trouble. Listen.
While working as a hostess at the Tilted Kilt, Heather Elvis meets Sydney Moorer, a welder by trade. Moorer has a company called Palmetto Maintenance that handles service of restaurant equipment. Heather Elvis has an immediate attraction to Moorer, even though he is nearly twice her age.
She was happy. I mean, she had a crush or, you know, an affinity for him, and it was mutual. They both, you know, courted each other.
I bet it was mutual, an old man like him hitting on a teen girl. What about those three children at home? That's from our friends at WPDE ABC 15, straight out to Michael Baer, director-producer of Vanished, the Heather Elvis Case, and founder of True Case Films. He also created a docuseries, Vanished, the Heather Elvis Case. Michael Baer, from all I have learned, this 19-year-old girl did not know at the beginning that her love object was married with three children.
That's correct, Nancy. In the beginning, in the first few dates, she had no idea that he was a married man.
But isn't it true, Michael, and I've learned this from you and your incredible podcast and docuseries, Vanished, the Heather Elvis Case, that he, however, was going around bragging about his dating a much younger woman, Heather, and was telling people that he and his wife had an open marriage. Is that true?
That's correct. So he was open about the relationship at the Tilted Kilt. He worked there along with Heather. So he was also telling people, look, you know, my wife knows about this. She has a, you know, she has her own relationships too. So this isn't something that, you know, is unnormal or anything like that. We have an open relationship, is what he was telling everybody around there.
Okay, hold it right there, Michael Baer. I've got a much older guy dating a teen girl who doesn't know that he is married with three children, and he's bragging about having an open marriage. I've made it very clear, Jimmy Richardson, Horry County solicitor, with my husband, open marriage, open casket. I think he understands it really well. Jimmy Richardson. Now, it's my understanding, and I'm learning a lot of this from you and a lot of this from Michael Baer and his podcast and documentary, that the older man had had many other sex affairs, but the wife never cared until Heather Elvis came along. Why?
I think Heather was beautiful and very young, and I think that his wife, really, when she found out about Heather, she was not nearly, these other girls had never been that beautiful or young, and I don't think she was threatened by them, not to the extent that she was by Heather. I think that Sydney had actually fallen for Heather in some sort of way, where maybe the other ones, it was just a tryst.
Well, as you heard Michael Baer say earlier, he worked at Tilted Kilt, not on the payroll, but he would do maintenance there. And I can just see this old perv walking around staring at Heather Elvis while he's got three children at home. Anyway, the wife does find out. Listen.
Heather Elvis and Sydney Moorer are not secretive about their affair. Heather doesn't know Moorer is married, but in a matter of weeks, Sydney Moorer's wife, Tammy, finds out and confronts Heather. Tammy Moorer begins making calls to Heather's phone, sending text messages, and even sends pictures of her and Sydney having sex. Tammy isn't just terrorizing Heather Elvis. Friends of the couple say Tammy was always in charge of her relationship with Sydney, and now she forces Sydney to get a tattoo of her name above his crotch.
Okay, hold on. You know, I'm sure I need to shrink on this, but, you know, it just seems to me, Nancy Lifesay, Horry County prosecutor, intimately familiar with this case, that if you have to force your husband to get your name tattooed right above his crotch, you should probably just break up. If it's come to that, it's like branding him. If you can't trust him as far as you can throw him, just get rid of him. Start over with somebody new. Consider it a starter marriage and get the real one, for Pete's sake.
I couldn't agree more. And it wasn't just the tattoo. It was that she had taken his phone. We had information where she was handcuffing him to the bed. Instead of letting him go, Tammy took the opposite route and doubled down on Sydney and her control of Sydney.
I've got a question. Is he the married man? You all refer to him by his first name. I guess you're all on a first name basis with him. I'm not. Sydney Moore, wife Tammy Moore. Is he younger than Tammy Moore? Does anybody know that?
He is younger, but just by maybe 2 or 3 years. It's not a huge age gap, but he is a little younger than...
No, it's not, Nancy Livesay, but Dr. Chloe Carmichael... It could be 1 year. It could be 6 months. That goes into her mentality. The wife, the freaky, jealous, tattoo-loving wife, the branding wife. Because in her mind, I guarantee you, oh, I got a younger man. I'm going to have a hard time holding on to him. My question is, why would you want to? I mean, you've already raised children. Why raise a man, for Pete's sake? But that said, I think this played into her paranoia, Dr. Chloe.
Well, Nancy, I totally agree with you. I mean, obviously, the sensible thing to do would be to just move on. But my guess is it could be a variety of things, but she might have felt like that would be admitting defeat. You know, sometimes there can be just a really fierce sense of competition. And instead of leaving, because that would feel like, you know, kind of going away with your tail between your legs, the wife might feel like she has to kind of come back and reclaim him.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Heather Elvis' roommate and best friend says Tammy Moore harasses the much younger Heather by calling her for hours on end. Tammy even calls Heather using Sydney's phone and forces Sydney to tell Heather she meant nothing to him. She was just a booty call and other horrible things that leave Heather Elvis in a state of shock. It takes time, but the calls and texts slow down and eventually stop, and Heather begins looking forward to the future again.
To Debbie and Morgan Elvis, these are Heather's mom and sister. Did she ever reveal to you, Debbie, all of the harassing phone calls from the wife, Tammy Moore? Did she ever state that she was concerned about it and that they wouldn't stop? They were all hours of the day or night.
She mentioned some phone calls when she got sent home from work. There was a problem at work where she was being harassed and the police were called. She was sent home. Heather does not like to miss work, and she was very upset about being sent home and missing work. So she came to the house and was telling me, she read me this whole conversation on the phone, and the last of it, she responded with a period, and she said, because that's what I think about that, and was telling me that this girl was obsessed with her, that it was an ex of somebody that she had been dating, that she was no longer dating. And that's all I knew. I didn't know about a married man. I didn't know about all of the phone calls and texts and pictures that she was sent. I didn't know any of that until the trials were getting ended again.
She probably didn't want you to know what had happened in her life. And I'd like to point out that the reason she came home from work that day is that some of the other waitresses were making fun of her about Tammy Moore constantly calling her and texting her, and they were making light of it, and it was just too much for this little teen girl to take. But we know, Michael Bayer, that as time went on, weeks went by, months went by, the calls subsided, and she began dating another guy more her age, right?
That's correct. She ended up meeting a guy named Stephen Schiraldi, I think it was over Instagram. They went to the same high school, but I don't think they knew each other in high school. So it was someone that she met over social media, and then she agreed to go on a date with him.
And I was looking at their date. They were driving around looking at Christmas lights, and he was teaching her to drive a stick shift. I know that because she took a selfie of herself trying to learn to drive a stick shift. And he brings her home that night. Listen.
Stephen Schiraldi drops Heather Elvis off at her apartment around 1:15 a.m. December 18th. Heather's best friend and roommate, Bree Warlman, is visiting family out of state. When Heather calls her at 1:44 a.m., Bree thinks Heather is calling to tell her about her date. Instead, Heather Elvis is hysterical. She tells Warlman Sidney Moore called, telling her he's leaving his wife and wants her to meet up with him. Warlman tells Elvis not to meet with him right now, to sleep on it. The call lasts for 2 minutes.
So, Nancy Livesay, let me understand. Sidney Moore and his crazy wife, Tammy Moore, and I mean that in the lay sense, not the legal sense. She's not insane. After a period of quiet, suddenly he, the married ex of three children, calls her in the middle of the night and says he wants to get back together and to come meet him. Is that right?
That's right. And we figured out later that that phone call was made from a payphone. So Sidney Moore had gone to a payphone around 1:30 in the morning and placed this call to Heather Elvis. The phone call was about 4 minutes. And you see from the phone call that she immediately calls the roommate and relays everything said on the phone call.
And that phone call is where everything goes sideways. Listen.
We know that the cell phone was last used 3:41 Wednesday morning a.m. That's been confirmed.
Investigators find that a phone call was placed to Heather at 1:35 a.m. from a payphone. According to what roommate Bree told police, this might have been a call from Sidney Moore. Heather's cell phone receives another call from a payphone at 2:30 a.m. No one answers. At 3:37 a.m., Heather's phone moves from Peachtree Landing. Shortly after 3:37 a.m., multiple calls are made to Sidney Moore's phone but go unanswered. At 6 a.m., all activity on Heather's phone stops.
That's from our friends at HLN. But then we have to look at the digital phone records. What do we learn? To Peter Sestier, former Lieutenant Horry County PD, who worked this case, what did the cell phone evidence show you? And who uses a payphone, for Pete's sake?
He had used a payphone to contact her at about 1:30 in the morning. But the digital signal from her phone, we were able to track her phone after that point where she travels back home to her apartment and then travels further north in the Myrtle Beach area, I'm assuming looking to meet up with him. She then turns around, comes back towards her apartment, stops there momentarily before her phone tracks from her apartment straight down to the Peachtree Landing.
After a period of doldrums where this young teen girl hears nothing from her married ex or his crazy wife, we think we understand now what was the tipping point. Listen.
Investigators begin to build a case. Phone records reveal activity between Heather and Sidney Moore's phones in the early hours of December 18th. Surveillance footage shows Moore purchasing a pregnancy test at Walmart at 1:12 a.m. And Moore is also captured on surveillance making a call from a payphone to Heather's cell phone at 1:35 a.m.
Oh, my stars. To Nancy Livesay joining us, Horry County prosecutor. Nancy, so the old married man gets the teen girl pregnant? Is that who the pregnancy test is for? And the wife is in there, or the husband is in there buying a pregnancy test? And then we see him at a payphone calling her?
That's correct. And that's what the evidence shows, is that there had been some changes in Heather Elvis's body prior to this phone call. And in fact, such a significant change, she required a new uniform at Tilted Kilt. There had been phone calls from...
Okay, hold on just a moment. Jimmy Richardson, Nancy Livesay is being extremely delicate. Richardson, Horry County solicitor, What do you mean? Why did she have to get a new uniform, Richardson?
She had gone from like a B cup to a D cup almost overnight. Her breasts had grown. She had had to change uniforms and go up like two sizes. And she was apparently talking to other workers that she felt like she was pregnant. Plus, they were putting two and two together. That is why we believe that 15 minutes before being caught on the payphone, which was caught by camera, he was caught by another camera at Walmart buying a cigar and a pregnancy test. So he immediately went from the Walmart straight up the road. Tammy was in the vehicle with him. They drive straight up the road, maybe a half of a mile to that payphone. And that is the first call that Heather has heard from Sydney Moore in months.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
When was the last time you were here with them or talked to them or anything like that?
It was earlier tonight. I don't know the exact time, but
okay.
I left. I was probably gone an hour and a half from my mom's, and I saw them about 45 minutes before that.
I'll never forget that. We all know Alex Murdaugh, now convicted of the double murders of his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul, gunning them down, then pretending he wasn't at the crime scene. That's him lying to police about being at his mom's at the time the two were murdered. But you know what? Cell phone data doesn't lie. Neither did nav systems in his car. But I love the way he broke off just for like a split 1 second to have a little whimper of pain. Really, Murdaugh? Same thing here. To Michael Bayer, producer of Vanished, the Heather Elvis Cases documentary as well, what does the digital path prove about these payphones and her phone as well?
Well, I think the investigators were able to kind of put together a path of where Heather was, because after getting that payphone call, she was then, her phone pinged and she had another, her cell phone call where she went out to the Carolina Forest. And that's where she ended up speaking to Sydney Moore. And then she actually went back to her apartment. They're able to ping it there. And then she finally then went to the Peachtree boat landing where her phone pinged one more time. And that was the last time that it pinged.
The antebellum home we're showing you is actually divided up into apartments. This is her apartment. Her phone pinged there. To Peter Sister, joining us, former lieutenant at Horry County PD, who worked this case. What did you make of the digital evidence, the cell phone evidence? It's powerful. The triangulation process is undeniable, and it proves a lot. I don't care what these two say. The digital evidence shows something very different. And again, who uses a payphone when you've got a cell phone? You use a payphone or put your phone in airplane mode or turn it off like Brian Koberger. Out of all the time his phone was monitored, when did he turn it off? When he's leaving the quadruple murder scene, according to prosecutors. So what did you learn? What did you learn from a review of all of this digital evidence, Peter?
The phone tells the entire story of what's going on. Obviously, you can't tell whether the phone is in Heather's possession, but that's the assumption. But the phone tracks from her apartment up to that Longbeard's bar and grill. And the reason why I believe it tracked up to there was at some point, Sydney Moore had told Heather that he was working at Longhorn's, another local steakhouse. I think she did not quite understand what he said and thought it was Longbeard's, which is closer to her home. She then travels up there, spends about 15 minutes. The phone then travels back down towards her apartment, stops in the parking lot of her apartment again, before it then begins to move again, going south from her residence. to the Peachtree Landing.
And you know what else is interesting, Peter Sestair? It's my understanding that Timmy and Sidney Moore lived about 3 miles from the landing, Peachtree Landing, where her Intrepid, her car, is found parked perpendicular. Isn't that right? They live very close to that.
That's correct. They do live very close. And the road that would take you from the Mora's house to the Peachtree Landing is all back roads. So it's not like you're coming out onto any main highways. However, in those back roads were some cameras that enabled us to catch glimpses of vehicles going by.
Oh, I'm so happy you said that. Peter Sestair, still on the money here. Former Lieutenant Horry County PD, he knows the facts like the back of his hands. Nancy Live say he's right. And dare I bring up Alex Murdaugh again, who arranged for himself to be shot in the head. He lived. But he thought there were no cameras anywhere around when that happened. But lo and behold, on that rural road where he had his dope dealer shoot him and then try to pretend it was the real killer of his wife and son, there was a security surveillance camera at a Baptist church way down the road where he turned in and he was busted on that video surveillance. Nancy, explain to me, what is Peter Sestair talking about? That a Ford F-150, a dark Ford F-150 is passed going to the landing where her car was found. Who's Ford F-150? I think I know the answer to that.
That's right. It's going to be Sidney Moore's and Tammy Moore's. And in fact, there was one camera on 814, which was the road they lived on. And then when you take a right to get on Mill Pond to go down to the landing, there was a second camera. So you literally see them leave their house, go down 814, they're caught on camera, and then take the right and go down Mill Pond and go towards Peachtree Landing. So they were caught twice, clearly going to the landing.
Did a married woman, the mother of three, manipulate her husband to help her commit murder of a teen girl, a restaurant hostess, now pregnant with her husband's baby? It wouldn't be the first time women have manipulated their love object into murder. Listen.
When Jay asked, okay, well, what did you do about it back then? Diane looked this man dead in the eyes and said, I made him kill the girl.
Dating in high school, Diane Zamora and David Graham planned to serve in the Navy and Air Force, respectively, after graduation. They also planned to get married. When David confesses to Diane that he had sex with another girl, Adrian Jones, Zamora becomes hysterical and tells him the only way she'll ever trust him again is if he kills Jones. Graham agrees and lures Jones out of her house, drives her to Joe Pool Lake. Once parked, Diane Zamora, quietly hidden in the vehicle, hits Jones in the head with a dumbbell. Jones tries to run, but Graham gives chase, catches her, and shoots her twice in the head.
With the whole world in front of them, cadets at the Naval Academy and the Air Force Academy plot murder and then murder a 16-year-old little girl that was working at a drive-thru over jealousy. Sound familiar? And then, of course, there's the case of Fotis Doulos, who murders his wife, Jennifer Doulos, the mother of their 5 children, with the help of his lover, Michelle Traconis. There you see the video of Fotis Doulos throwing, oh, there's Michelle Traconis rearing her ugly head. The two of them throwing out bloody items, shirts, bra, rags, sponges, drenched in the blood of Jennifer Doulos. What makes a woman help a murderous man, or in the current case, what makes a woman manipulate her husband into killing his teen lover? That's the question. Then, of course, we've got Natalie Keepers and David Eisenhower. She took part, Natalie Keepers, in the murder and the disposal of the body of a little girl, a 13-year-old girl.
Dear David, you are my crush, but I know you don't think of me like that, but I don't care. I will always be here if you're looking for a good time. I'm here when you had a bad day. I'm here, and I don't want that to change. I want to be in your life for as long as you can stand me, and I know I'm annoying, and I ask for too much, but I'm a girl, and I have a heart and feelings, and my feelings get hurt a lot, but it's never been hurt by you, and I like that.
The FBI figured out that Cole had regularly used the app Kick. That app allows teens to communicate anonymously, so their parents won't know. David Eisenhower lured this little girl out of her home with promises of a, quote, secret date and murdered her in cold blood because he was apparently afraid that the relationship was going to be exposed by this precious little girl. When Nicole's body was found, she had 14 stab wounds. One was to the neck, as confirmed by a medical examiner.
A little teen girl murdered. And Natalie Keepers was right in there helping Eisenhower do the deed. I guess the one that would really take the cake would be killer wife Carla Homolka.
Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo look like the couple poised atop a wedding cake, but their beautiful looks hide an ugly secret. Together, the married couple rape, torture, and kill at least three underage girls, including Carla's little sister, Tammy. When Tammy chokes on her own vomit and dies, based on statements from Homolka and Bernardo, the death is ruled an accident.
Straight out to Debbie and Morgan Elvis, the mom and sister of Heather. Now that we know that these two ghouls straight from hell, Sydney and Tammy Moore, are responsible for the disappearance of Heather, what is your message tonight, Debbie?
I'm hoping that all of this new publicity is going to bring some new tips in. I'm hoping that somebody will see this and say, oh, somebody told me about this, or one of their family members said this, or this is where they used to hang out or hide stuff. Any little part of information that somebody has about them, their nature, their lifestyle, that might lead us to where Heather is, that's what I feel comes next.
Do you believe, Debbie, and this is a hard question, do you believe that there is any hope that Heather is still alive, or are you hoping to bring her body home and bury her?
I hope to bring her home in any way that's possible, in any form or method that's possible. And I refuse to give up any hope about any possible way to bring her home or anything that might have happened or be happening.
If you know or think you know anything about the disappearance and what many people believe to be the murder of this teen girl, Heather Elvis, please dial 843-915-8477. Repeat, 843-915-8477. We remember American hero Deputy Sheriff Nicholas Waste, Knox County Sheriff's, Illinois, killed in the line of duty, survived by wife turned widow Jessica, children Ava and Emery. American hero Deputy Sheriff Nicholas Waste.
Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.